What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to yet another episode of the Jabcast. As always, I am Ben. Alongside me in the Zoom call are my good friends and co-hosts, Alec and Jared. How are you guys doing? Doing all right?
Can't complain.
Pretty good.
How are you, Ben?
No, I'm doing okay.
Doing okay.
As you can tell by the, I don't have a face on Zoom, so just have to make your own assumptions. But yeah, we got a really good show. I'm excited to talk about all this stuff.
Yes.
So let's just jump right into it, Jared. Tell the fine listeners what we watched.
Yeah. So Alec, this was his week to decide a movie, and he gave us Red Notice. This is one of Netflix's recent original movies from this year, starring Dwayne Johnson, otherwise known as The Rock. We have Ryan Reynolds and Gal Gadot, among some other people here and there, but they're the main cast.
Isn't it Gal Gadot?
No, I thought it was Gadot, but it's Gadot.
Oh, well, I feel stupid.
It's confusing because there's a big old P there, but then some people think it's silent. Who knows?
Yeah, not me.
Yeah. But yeah, there's Red Notice is the highest level warrant to hunt and capture the world's most wanted criminals. So that's the namesake in the movie. Dwayne Johnson is an FBI profiler of these types of people, and he's hunting down Ryan Reynolds, who's like a museum thief. And then Gal Gadot is also in that mix. She's called the Bishop. She's actually the most wanted art thief in the world. And they kind of go on this huge globe-trotting pursuit to find the three eggs of Cleopatra.
Correct. Right? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a lot of double crossing, a lot of mysteries, a lot of espionage and spy type shit. This movie was terrible. It was. Let me start by saying, and I texted the guys this either today or yesterday. Red Notice had a higher budget than Dune, which is one of the most visually impressive and large scale movies I've seen in recent memory. And this movie somehow had more, and it was all because of the paychecks for Dwayne Johnson, Gal Gadot, and Ryan Reynolds. Even though Dune had a much larger cast with, in my opinion, better actors, but whatever. And well, still on that note, nothing about this movie looked expensive. The CGI and the green screen were both terrible. But besides that, I mean, the plot was kind of cool. It made me wish we had like world-renowned, infamous art thieves running around. Like that would just make our world so much more interesting to me. Oh, some guy just broke into the Louvre. He stole the whatever. But that doesn't happen, unfortunately. Not enough. No one's got the courage anymore, I guess, which is sad in my opinion. But. Yeah, I don't know. It had like an Indiana Jones style feel at points. You know, they're looking for like these old artifacts, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of any of these people acting wise, really. I like Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, but outside of that, I'm not really a fan of any of their work. So wasn't that fun for me. Ben, I'll hand it over to you, and then we can let Alec go last since he's the one that gave it to us.
Yeah, similar thoughts to you. I thought the plot was an interesting idea, I guess. Basically, every heist movie is kind of the same, but you know, each one has like their own unique characteristics that they'll put on it. And I thought that this one was like an interesting idea, but there's just nothing worse than a comedy movie that just isn't funny. And this movie was just not funny to me. I really don't like The Rock. He's probably one of my least favorite actors. I don't mind Ryan Reynolds. I think he just has fallen into that trap where he's just basically playing the same person in every movie, really, and you're more like, oh, that's Ryan Reynolds, rather than like, oh, that's whatever character he's playing. Okay, that was okay. But they just like don't work together. Like it just felt like I was watching like the three of them no one was even filming them. It was just like them just like talking like normally.
Yeah.
And I'm reading some of the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes right now, and it has great audience scores, by the way. And I'm reading a few of these reviews, and this one guy said, It's a fun movie with lots of laugh out loud moments, great action stunts, and cool cinematography that works without hitting you over the head like a certain Sandy Space movie.
Are you kidding me?
Bro, are you serious? No, it's, I don't know. I came into this thinking that I'd have a lot more like bad to say about it, but it's just like a nothing movie. Like it didn't make me like feel much of anything throughout the movie. But to avoid shitting on it for too long, I'm just gonna throw this over to Alec because I know that he enjoyed it at least a little bit.
Yeah, I did enjoy it a little bit. I thought it was, I wasn't like keeling over laughing at any point, but there were a few times where I was like, like small little chuckles that made me laugh. It wasn't a bad movie. Wasn't a bad movie at all. It wasn't a bad movie. I thought it was all right. I've seen better heist movies. I've seen way better comedy movies. I agree that the CGI and green screen wasn't all that great. But for the most part, I don't think it was terrible. I definitely think if you like heist movies, or not like a diehard, but like a casual fan, you would like this movie. I feel like if you like Ryan Reynolds, The Rock, or Gal Gadot, you would also like this movie. One thing I didn't like was how many times Ryan Reynolds was throwing, like, I guess Deadpool-style jokes throughout the whole movie. That I wasn't a fan of. And I kind of agree that it doesn't seem like they worked all that well together. I feel like that The Rock was trying to get the same kind of interactions out of Ryan Reynolds that he gets with Kevin Hart, and it wasn't working. And I also didn't like that there were too many twists.
Yeah.
Because if you twist too much, you're going to get dizzy.
Ooh.
Bam. Yeah. No, but I definitely think there were way too many twists throughout this entire movie.
Yeah.
But to move a little bit off the rails here, because Jared brought it up and made me curious. There actually are currently art thieves roaming around.
Yeah.
I looked it up and I found 5 notorious ones that are currently in jail, and it's all been pretty recently, like within the last 20 years.
Yeah, I did look some up after I saw the movie, but they're not like,
it's not enough, like, you know? Oh my God. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's kind of
household names.
Yeah. The movie, I think definitely, like, for lack of a better term, glamorizes art thieves.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like this list, if you're into art and you're in the art world, these are huge names, I feel like.
Right.
Like, you know how there, because I know there are some people out there who, if I say Michael Jordan is a legend, they're not going to know who he is. And even like, and even on the show, like me and Ben have probably a much different respect and understanding of what guys like Michael Jordan did than you do, Jared. You know, like, right. I know you know who he is, and you, I'm not saying that you don't respect the dude for what he did, but he's obviously a much bigger deal to me and Ben than you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
So I kind of feel like art thieves are kind of the same, whereas if you're not really in tune with the art community, you're not going to know who these people are.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth a mention that the best ones, no one probably knows their names, and that's why they're the best.
Yeah.
You know, they probably have like identities or whatever in the red notice list, wherever that is, if it exists. They're like, oh, you know, they got their code names for these guys or whatever, but they're not going to let the public know about it.
Yeah.
I wanted to say
real quick, ahead, Ben. Why is it that every heist movie since like 2005 has cast like the main like heister as basically just Nathan Drake? They're all that like shaggy white dude with like a witty sense of humor, you know what I mean? And like, right. They're different. Ryan Reynolds' character is literally named Nathan, I'm pretty sure.
Good point. Yeah, I'm trying to think of some others. Go back. I'm looking at a list of heist movies right now. Pretty good segue. Yeah. Well, immediately, the first connection I thought of to what you just said, Ben, were the Ant-Man movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Scott Lang is a pretty, like, he falls into that same archetype as
Nathan
Drake. Yeah.
I agree.
They're, yeah, those are good. Probably my best or my favorite heist movie is Heat. Michael Mann. It's Al Pacino and Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
Al Kilmer. God, that movie's so good. What else? Army of the Dead, that just came out this year. I was not a fan. The Now You See Me movies are pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought they were different. Taking that magic look and like kind of spinning it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very different take on a heist movie. The second one, I didn't like the second one compared to the first one. But the
second one's not nearly as good.
No,
it actually ruins the legacy of the first one.
Yeah, I really did like the whole spin incorporating magic.
Yeah. What else we got? Well, some of the Fast and Furious movies turned into heists. They're really just blowing shit up and stealing things, but it's like such a reduced form of heists, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get at. There's the Italian Job. I don't know if you guys have seen either one of those. Oh, the Ocean's movies. We have to talk about the Ocean movies.
Yeah, the Ocean movies.
Yeah.
I've seen a few of the Ocean movies, but I honestly did not really like the newest Ocean movie with all the
Ocean's 8.
Yeah, I didn't like that one.
I like that one.
I don't know why. I don't know what it was about it. It seemed boring.
No, I actually really like that one. Like just the way they took it with being at the Met Gala, I thought that was a really fun idea. The original trilogy, well, the original Steven Soderbergh trilogy is still pretty damn good. What else? He also did Logan Lucky. Steven Soderbergh's like the guy for heist movies. I don't know if you guys have seen Logan Lucky.
I have not.
That's, it's like rednecks trying to rob the, Indy 500, I think, the NASCAR race. I think it's the Indy 500. It's a race. And they find out that like all the money from all the concessions and the betting and everything just gets sucked into like one place. So they try to rob that. It's, Adam Driver and Channing Tatum are like two rednecks, and they break out Daniel Craig from a prison because he's like an explosives expert or something. Adam Driver has one arm and he's got a prosthetic, and it's like a bunch of sight gag humor. Hilary Swank's like the special agent hunting them down and everything. It's really funny. I love that movie. What else we got? Yeah, I think we hit the. I mean, oh, Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Tarantino classic. Ben, you have any? I feel like I've been talking a lot.
Obviously, the Oceans movie, the first few Oceans movies, I really like. Those kind of like set the bar for heist movies, I think.
Yeah.
Drive, I think you could consider a heist
movie. Yeah, for sure. For
that's
sure.
A great one. What else? Like Baby Driver.
Yeah.
I can't really think of many series. I still think the best critique of the heist genre is still that Rick and Morty episode. With like the heistatron.
Oh yeah.
Or the convention. Yeah. It's basically, if you've seen like Now You See Me or like Catch Me If You Can, that's basically like what the episode's making fun of. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I'm like looking at this list and I haven't like seen most of these movies. So I'm wondering like where it came about that like every heist movie is the same. Because like I've seen like the Ocean's movies, I've seen like Reservoir Dogs and stuff, and like those movies don't really like follow that blueprint, I guess. Maybe there's like other ones that are more like similar to that like typical heist story, but I'm not really seeing it.
Yeah, heists are it's a pretty easy action like subgenre to write a movie for. Like just the concept of a heist kind of writes itself. You know, you've got your three to four step plan, whatever it ends up being, but you know, you just, all you have to do is write a plan. Like I said, you just write the steps and then you just make the scenes to fit the steps. It's not that, it's not a complicated storytelling mechanic, I guess. Another one I have to bring up is The Town. with Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner. That one's fantastic. Oh, and John Hamm, I think, too. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I hated that movie.
What?
That's like one of my least favorite movies.
You're joking.
I watched it with my one friend, and he's like, dude, this is like the best like heist movie ever. I was watching. I was like, what am I watching? Like, this is like so contrived. I probably should watch it again, but I was just like so.
What didn't you like about it?
Ben Affleck.
Oh, don't even. Was it his Boston accent?
No, just like the general concept. I'm not a big Jeremy Renner guy either, honestly. Oh. And like the I didn't like the romance aspect. I don't know, just me.
Jeremy, that was like his best performance ever, Jeremy Renner.
No, I was just not a fan.
Damn.
Same thing with The Usual Suspects. The same friend turned it on. I was like, man, I just don't like this movie.
I liked that movie, but I didn't like it as nearly as much as I should or thought I would. And I don't think it's as good as people say it is.
What about you, Alec? What are your thoughts, man?
Pretty much the same as you guys for the most part. I haven't really seen a whole lot. One movie that I think does a really good job of kind of making fun of heist movies is Masterminds. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie. With Zach Galifianakis, Owen Wilson,
Kristen Wiig, Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah. I think that movie is hysterical. Leslie Jones plays an FBI specialist.
Am I crazy or is that based on a true story?
I actually think it was. I could be wrong. I'm pulling it up right now.
American crime comedy film. Yeah, based on the 1997 Loomis Fargo robbery in North Carolina. Yeah, and then for my ticket or miss it this week, I went and saw House of Gucci. This is about the rise and eventual fall of Mauricio Gucci. With his wife, Patrizia Reggiani, who took the name Gucci after they got married. She was played by Lady Gaga. Mauricio was played by Adam Driver. His father, Rodolfo Gucci, was played by Jeremy Irons. We also have his uncle, Aldo Gucci, played by Al Pacino, and his cousin, Paolo, played by Jared Leto. We also have Salma Hayek, who is Pina Auriemma. She is a TV tarot card reader, and she helps Patrizia in the movie, trying to send her on her path to success or whatever. Patrizia basically marries Mauricio because she wants the money and the power of the Gucci family. As most people know, if you don't, I guess I should have said this in the beginning, Gucci is a fashion company. They make shoes, purses, things of that nature, luxury stuff. Yeah. So this is very much an Oscar bait movie. It's very long, also 2 hours and 38 minutes. So this is really all about the performance and the direction. And as far as that's concerned, it's really good. I was really pleased with everyone's performances. The only complaint I've really seen online, and I kind of agree, is Jared Leto as Paolo is very cartoony. There are times where he feels like an SNL character. He's just really going way too hard into the Italian accents, I guess. And that was another general complaint I saw was people's Italian accents in the movie were a little hokey at times, which I get. We've already talked in a previous episode about how accents are kind of weird in movies to begin with, so I won't tread those same waters again. But yeah, that's an issue if you feel it's an issue. I didn't have a problem with it. I just, you know, that's just part of the movie. So I just went along for the ride. But yeah, performances all around. Lady Gaga was fantastic. Adam Driver, it was more of a reserved role for him, but that's who Mauricio was. So he did a great job as well. Jeremy Irons wasn't in it all too much, but I've never seen him give a bad performance in his life. And Al Pacino was my favorite performance of the movie. Even at his ripe, almost 80 years of age, I think, even being shaped like a pumpkin as he compresses, getting down to his older years, he's still giving it his all. I was really impressed with him. Really happy to see that he's not still phoning it in at his age. So, yeah, this was directed by Ridley Scott, and he did a good job too. I can't really name what makes a Ridley Scott movie a Ridley Scott movie. He's got a pretty diverse filmography. You know, we've got Gladiator, Alien, things of that nature, and then we have House of Gucci. Oh, and The Last Duel from this year. All very different movies, so it's kind of hard to pinpoint what makes it a Ridley Scott movie, but I was really impressed. I had a really good time, but I will say it is very long. Like I said, 2 hours, 38 minutes. And I think the last 30 really dragged. You kind of know what's going to happen by the end. It's just, it's a slow burn by that point, just leading up to what you know is going to happen. And I felt like they were just dragging their feet towards the end. So it's up to you if you want to see this. I think I've talked about this before. This is award season, so it's going to be a lot of Oscar bait movies, a lot of dramas, things of that nature. So if you only go to the theater to take advantage of the big screen and the huge speakers and all that and the popcorn and whatever, you could probably wait. You can microwave some popcorn at home. You're not going to benefit at all from the technologies of a theater. Like I said, because it's all about the performances and you can get that anywhere. So, but if you're someone like me that just likes to see these as soon as they come out, obviously go and see it. But I think overall you could probably wait. Unless you like to vote on your own Oscar ballots for the end of the year, beginning of next year when the award ceremony is, then you're going to want to see this so you can be informed. But yeah, that's my spiel on House of Gucci.
I'm thinking with Ridley Scott, all the movies that I have seen, looking at his IMDb that he's directed, all of them have been well over 2 hours long. So it seems like he makes very long, detailed movies.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh my God.
Every single one that I've seen has been at least the shortest one so far. Has been like two hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah. I'm looking at his, well, I pulled up IMDb and it showed me his producer credits first, but he's got like a dozen movies either filming or in pre-production.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you make a good point. He does kind of, they're not epics. I would say Zack Snyder's more of the epic guy because he made the, you know, his vision, his scope of movies is like 4 hours. As is evident with the Justice League. But yeah, he's got Last Duel, House of Gucci, Kitbag, which is the Napoleon movie starring Joaquin Phoenix. So those are all like historical dramas. He also did, what was the other one? The other historical drama. Gladiator. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Oh, but then he does things like Black Hawk Down, G.I. Jane. Yeah. Alien, Prometheus, Alien Covenant. Oh, Exodus, Gods and Kings. So yeah, he's got a lot of interests as far as what he directs.
Yeah, he doesn't really have a genre.
Yeah.
Did you notice he has one
Blade Runner
credit?
No, let me see what it is.
I have no idea what this is. I mean, it's even uncredited.
Oh, that was probably when he was getting into the industry because it was 1969.
Oh yeah, definitely.
26 minute.
There was
short
only
film, yeah.
There's only two people in it.
Oh, it was written by his brother, maybe. Yeah. Written by Tony Scott.
Yeah,
Tony Scott. My Baltimore accent bleeding through. Okay.
All right, let's stop on this rabbit hole. Move over to TV.
All right. Well, should we talk about our next week's movie, next show's movie?
Oh yeah.
We're going to do The Power of the Dog. This is a pretty highly anticipated movie. It's been coming out at different film festivals. A lot of talk about director nominations for Jane Campion already. She's the one directing it. But it's a Western. I'll read the description here from Google. A domineering rancher responds with mocking cruelty when his brother brings home a new wife and her son until the unexpected comes to pass. It's got a great cast as well. I know Benedict Cumberbatch is the lead role. Apparently he plays kind of an asshole. So he's done that before, but I'm sure it's going to be great. We also have Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons, who are married, by the way. I don't know if you guys knew that, but they are married. Cody Smith McPhee. And yeah, I think that's it for the main cast. Yeah, I'm excited. I love Westerns. I know Ben does too.
Oh, yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch, really great actor. So I'm going to give this to you guys. Hopefully it's good. Hopefully I don't disappoint. I see a lot of brooding and sadness in the photos on IMDb. So that's good. But yeah, all right. Now we can move on into TV. We decided on Hitmonkey. This is the last animated show from Marvel Television. This is separate from Disney's production of Marvel projects. They're related, but they're not in the same universe. They're not even sanctioned by majority of the same people. They're in talks, but they're not really connected in any way. But yeah, so Hitmonkey is, like I said, it's animated. It's kind of played to the style of a Japanese revenge Western, that type of thing. I forget what the type of monkey is called, but it's one of those white-haired monkeys that are chilling in the, and I know I described it the same way last show. They're like chilling in the hot springs up in the mountains. And Jason Sudeikis voices this guy named Bryce, and he's a hitman, and a job goes wrong. He ends up getting killed at the spot of one of these springs. And the guys that kill him also slaughter the entire, it's actually called a government, I think, is a group of monkeys. I think it's called a government. They kill the entire government of monkeys, except for Hitmonkey. Jason Sudeikis' character Bryce is then resurrected as a ghost, and for some reason he is attached, or I guess bound to Hitmonkey.
Yeah,
and he has to help him on his quest for revenge, and they kind of uncover this giant political conspiracy in Japan. Is it Tokyo? I forget the city.
Yeah,
Tokyo. All right, there we go. I'm gonna throw it to Ben first, see what he thinks. And then I guess he can give it to Alec.
Yeah, I really like this. I thought it was really, really good. I remember seeing the trailer for this on like Twitter or something like a month ago, and I didn't think it was real. I must have watched it like when I first watched it. Like I wasn't convinced it was like a real thing.
Right.
Jared gave it to us, and I looked at the posters. I was like, man, this looks really similar to that dream that I thought I had. yeah, but it's real, and it's really, really good. Alec just put Japanese. I'm gonna butcher this.
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
Makake.
I'm just trying to. What did you? Just man, you can't talk about that on air.
Just trying to avoid saying Makake.
yeah. Here, I'll ask Google. You keep going.
Snow monkey. A snow monkey is like the unscientific term.
yeah. Exactly.
It's good. Macaque.
Macaque. Okay.
Macaque.
Yes. Yeah. Like macaque with a Boston accent.
Macaque. macaque.
Yeah, it was really good, really gory. I can see why they wouldn't want it on Disney Plus.
Right.
On Hulu. Jason Sudeikis' character, I wasn't really a huge fan of. He's kind of just like a deadpan, not deadpan, but just like I saw someone describe him as Jason Sudeikis doing like a Deadpool impression.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad, just kind of boring, like straight up the middle. I really liked the guy who played Ito. I really liked Nakanishi Nobi. Thought he was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, just really interesting concept. I wasn't sure how they were going to make a 10-episode series about a monkey killing people be interesting, yeah. But they did a really great job kind of covering the conspiracy, as Jared said. So I really enjoyed it. Alec, how about you?
I enjoyed it as well. I thought it was really good. The only thing that I wish that it had was I wish it was consistent with the monkey subtitles the whole time. Like when Jason Sudeikis is talking to Hitmonkey, I wish you could see what Hitmonkey said.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Instead of just implying based off of Jason Sudeikis' response.
Yeah.
I also don't know what it was, but I just think Bryce's image didn't fit Jason Sudeikis' face voice. Mm.
I don't think
the voice fit the character's image.
It was weird because there were times, and I don't think he does, but there were times looking at him where for some reason I thought they tried to make him look like Jason Sudeikis. Like he vaguely does, but that's also just like a very like default look for a white guy. You know, like the messy hair and the 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah, I don't know why. It just, his voice didn't sit right with the character's look.
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you mean.
Honestly, I feel like the character's look and build should have sounded more of like a Hugh Jackman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like that kind of a guy.
Like a little dark, or a little bit of a deeper voice.
Yeah, not so much of like a next door neighbor voice. That's just like I honestly don't know a better way to put it.
Wow, that's like a really good description. If you written it would make no sense, but for some reason the way you said it, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, like
Jason, like talking, he's got like a talking over the fence type voice.
Yeah, like Jason Sudeikis does not sound like an assassin.
Yeah, yeah,
that's kind of like my big thing. I don't know what it was. That was pretty much it. Those are the only two things I didn't really like about it.
Yeah, I playing off of that, I just didn't like how it was like a magic type ghost situation of him being bound and everything. But it looked technological. Yeah. Like he like glitched out sometimes. So I was like, is this like a screen projection or something? That's what it felt like. Like he felt like a 2D projection of something. And he would like lag.
Yeah. I also felt like some of the antagonists were very resemblant of Scooby-Doo villains.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them kind of I got that vibe from a lot of different antagonists throughout the entire thing.
Like Silver Samurai.
Yeah, the Silver Samurai.
That ghost girl.
The ghost.
Yeah. Yeah, even, I see what you mean there too.
Even the main villain, the one that I can't remember.
Oh, at the end. Now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they all had, it seemed very Scooby-Doo villain-like to me.
For sure. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I really liked it too, though. I honestly didn't think it would be all that great. So I think that helped me enjoy it more because I had low expectations. Very, very violent, like I think Ben said.
Yeah.
Blood everywhere, gore. You know, again, that's something you can't see on Disney Plus. And it's such a wacky character. By the way, the character design is fantastic, I think. I know you can't really change much for a macaque monkey. But I really like how they put him in a pinstripes, not a pinstripe suit, but like a tux with the, what's it called when you have like the thin tie? Is there like a name for that? I don't know.
An assassin outfit.
If there is, just think of that when I'm saying it. You know what I mean? And then he's got a katana. It's just so cool to me. And he was just like so vengeful. A lot of fun. I didn't mind Jason Sudeikis as the ghost, whatever you want to call it. But I do 100% get what Alec was saying, especially with the subtitles. Yeah, the villains were great, too. Silver Samurai is such a goofy character from Marvel. I'm not sure how. Well, actually, they did kind of do it. They did really do it in The Wolverine, which was another Japanese revenge type Western. Yeah, I was happy. I think this is a good send-off for the Marvel television branch of Marvel products, I guess. They did MODOK, which was not as good as this, in my opinion, but still all right. But yeah, I think they're doing pretty good over there. Congrats to Hulu. But yeah, I guess now we can move into music. Ben, you want to take it away for us here?
Sure, as I always do. Gonna just go over what we do in our music segment. We trade albums and then we talk about them. Basically,
what sure.
And we're just gonna keep repeating this wicked cycle until we die. So
yeah.
gave us 30 by Adele. Alec gave us the strange case of dot 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 by Hailstorm, and I gave the guys The House is Burning by Isaiah Rashad. I'm going to talk about 30 first. The first album I'm going to talk about is 30, not 30.
I knew he was going to say that.
By Adele. Yeah, I really like this album. I was talking about how I have always liked Adele, but I have never listened to any of her albums comprehensively. And this is really good. Not something I would just listen to like all the time, because it's depressing, frankly.
Yeah.
But she has a she has a really good voice. She's fantastic. Easy on Me was the one song I had heard. I think it was her only single, actually, that I had heard leading into this. That was really good. If not a little generic, I think. But the rest of the album was really good as well. My Little Love was another favorite of mine. Love is a Game, the last track in the album, was pretty good. Yeah, just a great case of Adele's strengths. I keep saying, I gotta stop doing that.
Yeah, be mad at you.
I know. I just did it again. Now I'm pointing out to myself I can't stop doing it. It's just a really good album. I like Adele a lot. It was nice to finally like listen to one of her albums cover to cover. Had some good tracks. A lot of really low-key instrumentals. Nothing really gonna blow anybody out of the water instrumentally. But yeah, really nice album. I really liked it. Alec, what did you think about it?
I thought this was a classic Adele album. That's really all I can say about it. Like, Adele never disappoints. Her voice is unlike anyone else. There's very few artists who I feel have unique and impressive voices, and Adele is definitely one of them. Not many people are going to ever be able to create the sound that she can create. It's so weird, but she honestly has an incredible gift, and I can't say anything bad about her songs, any of them. Even if I'm not a huge fan of them, to the point where I may not listen to it every day, I'm not skipping a single Adele song ever if it pops up.
Yeah.
Oh, you hear that? I know she's listening.
She always does. She's a friend.
Yeah. Another friend of the show. We have a lot.
Yeah, we have a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really pleased with this. I compared to her other work. I think lyrically, it's probably her weakest. But her, like Alec said, her voice never disappoints. I don't think she can really make a bad song. Just from her voice alone, that can save anything. She could be singing about absolutely nothing. Like the lyrics can make no sense, and I'd still listen to it. She could be singing the phone book for all I care. Yeah, a lot of my absolute favorite from the album, actually, it's the one I just keep putting on loop over and over again, is I Drink Wine. I really like that. I think the chorus is really, really powerful. Love is a Game, another great one. Let me see here. There's another. Cry Your Heart Out. Like Ben said, a lot of really sad songs, but I like sad songs. So, you know, Adele's a great artist for me. She said this album's all about divorce, baby.
Oh my God.
So, and that's what it was. A lot of heartbreak, a lot of sadness. But she really delivered. I'm happy. I'm not happy that she's divorced, but I'm happy that she could put this together and talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's cathartic for her. And I guess cathartic for a lot of people that listen to it too. So yeah, really great. I was really happy with what you did.
Good.
So next up is The Strange Case of dot 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 by Hailstorm. We still have not figured out what The Strange Case is.
Which I know. I listened to the whole album and they still didn't tell me.
I'm going to go first, just really quick. Told Alec before the show that I actually really enjoyed this album. I don't think it did anything like super revolutionary, but it was a pretty solid, more mainstream sounding rock album. It sounds like something that would be on like an NHL soundtrack. It's very much like hockey music. I guess that's not surprising considering Alec recommended it. Yeah, not bad. It's not very long either. I listened to the the deluxe edition, which is 16 songs, but the last four are bonuses. Rock Show was a really good song. I like that one a lot. Ms. Hyde was also really good. Yeah, I mean, just a good, well-rounded album. I really love the lead singer's voice. She's great. She has a really great voice. It fits the style of music perfectly. Forgive me, Alec. I don't know any of their names. I didn't do any research into it, but
her name's Lindsay Hale.
Okay. Oh, I guess that makes sense.
Lindsay Hale Storm.
And her brother is the drummer.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they're a nice little group. Have they released much like since this?
Yeah, they have a more, they have a, I think this is their most recent. Yeah, that's their most recent album, but they did release kind of like a single, but it's the same, it's two songs and it's just two different versions of the same song.
Okay.
They have something from 2018.
They do,
which is, yeah, awesome. It's called Vicious. Oh,
they also have another 2015 album. Vicious was in 18, and then the 2021 is Back from the Dead. That's what they just released, and then they released an unplugged version.
Apple Music called them a metal quartet.
Yeah,
right. That just doesn't. I don't know if that's what they meant to make it sound like.
This, yeah, Vicious is their most recent album. That is my fault. And then they also have Into the Wildlife Deluxe. Seems like they just have deluxe albums on Spotify. But it, like I like them a lot. They're a good band. And I knew Jared. I'm excited to hear what Jared has to say because I knew he liked the Pretty Reckless, and I feel like they're very similar. So I knew I figured this would be a good fit.
Yeah. Alec, you and my parents would get along great as far as music goes. You are always giving me music that they listen to all the time. They're huge fans of them, probably a lot because of them being from Red Lion. Hailstorm, not my parents, but you know, that's really local. And they love, you know, they love rooting for the hometown heroes, I guess. And but yeah, this is, I've probably heard this entire album before, like through my life. Came out, what was it, 2012?
Yeah,
it was like 10 years old. Yeah, there's no way I haven't heard all of these songs like 20 times in these 10 years. So it's very familiar to me, but I do really like it. And you were right, just like you said, it's very similar to the Pretty Reckless in the exact ways that I enjoyed the Pretty Reckless. So yeah, this is a good album for me. I really liked it. Let me pull up the, it's been a couple of days since I listened to it. I really like Here's to Us at the end. I think that was a good final song. And I think Ben said this too, but Ms. Hyde was another one of my favorites.
Good. I'm really glad that you guys liked it. My favorite songs on this album are actually more of the faster paced songs, like Freak Like Me and Love Bites. Those Ooh. are my two favorite songs.
Alec likes along, the freaky songs.
Along with You Call Me a Bitch Like It's a Bad Thing. I like that song a lot too. But yeah, Here's to Us is a really good song.
I think Alec likes bad bitch music.
Yeah, definitely. I've been a fan of this band for a while.
Yeah.
And I think now this style of music is definitely very like NHL, but in 2012, I don't think it was. Benjamin.
Yeah.
But I listened to The House is Burning by Isaiah Rashad. That's what Ben gave us. I thought this album was awesome. I had a really good time listening to this album. Like I said from last time we spoke about it, I loved the album cover, and that's what made me really excited for it. And I just think the beats and everything throughout this entire album just kind of flowed very nicely together. Past time very well. I couldn't tell you a song that really like stuck out to me because I didn't see the name of all of them when they popped up. I'd have to listen to them again and then tell you like the name of them. But I listened to this kind of like towards the like right after the show, I turned this one on. It was pretty good though. I really did enjoy it. I liked some of the features that were on it. Very different than most, I guess, rap or R&B hip hop albums. But I don't know what Jerry thought.
Yeah, I actually did not like this. I listened to it when it first came out. Was that this year? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no desire to go back and listen to it again. And I really wanted to, because I was a big fan of Isaiah when his last album came out and he had his features. He was on Double XL and everything. I was like, this guy could be it. You know, and then he took that hiatus, which is fine. But I thought this, I guess, comeback album, if that's what you want to call it, I thought it was really lackluster. Nothing, like I said, nothing stood out to me. I didn't think any of the production was really that impressive. Lyrically, I thought it was good, but that's about the only good thing I could say about it. But I wouldn't say it was fun to listen to. And I went back and listened to it again, and I had the exact same reaction. So I don't know. This one just wasn't for me. That's fine. It doesn't make me not a fan of him. I still like him, but this was just a misfire for me. But Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I fall somewhere between the two of you. I didn't think it was nearly as good as the Sun's Tirade, but I also didn't think it was. I also didn't think it was that bad. Just kind of very like middle of the road. Like we know that he's really talented. I just don't think the album was his best display of that. So yeah, I mean, I liked it, obviously. That's why I gave it to you guys, but I do agree that I think it could have been a little better. At times, almost felt a little like incomplete. He was kind of like pad the track listing a little bit, so he just kind of chucked stuff in. I don't really see why there needed to be like a deluxe edition either, when the first one felt kind of bare bones. But
yeah.
So let's talk about what albums we're gonna give each other for next week. Jared, what are you giving us?
Yeah, this is called Oil of Every Pearl's Uninsides. I think that's how you say it. The uninsides is UN hyphen insides, but there's like a space outside of the hyphens. So I don't know. But it's by Sophie. She was a really popular producer. She unfortunately died pretty tragically, I think last year. She collaborated with Kendrick and Vince Staples and Aminé. She falls into this genre called hyperpop, which is kind of like Charmander from Aminé's new album, Ben. So that'll give you like an idea of what her music's like. But yeah, what do you think of the album art?
Seems very trippy to me.
Yeah.
I've listened to Sophie before, so I'm familiar with her work. I have not listened to this. But yeah, album art is really nice. I really like the way it looks, composition, everything.
Yeah.
Face Shopping's on here. All right.
Yeah.
But an idea of what this sounds like. Okay. Yeah, I'm excited for this. I really like Sophie. It's a shame that she died so tragically.
Mm-hmm.
Alec, what are you giving us, man?
I am giving you guys Renewal by Ben, by Billy Strings.
By Ben.
Billy Strings.
Okay.
It is 16 songs, an hour and 10 minutes. Nice little change of pace. I listened to this album and I just thought it was so good. I thought it was fun. It was different. Something that you're not going to hear on the radio nearly every day, if at all, if you listen to the radio. And it's a bluegrass album. So it's definitely niche, and it's definitely something that a lot of people probably don't listen to or hear every day. So I just think it's a good change of pace, and I think you guys might actually like this.
Yeah, I'm a fan of bluegrass, actually, so I'm looking forward to this. I had a friend, another friend, that suggested this to me. How recent did this come out? September?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it was somewhere around then that he recommended it to me, but I just got around. I will now be getting around to it, so he'll be happy I'm listening to it. But yeah, I'm looking at the album art. It's actually really cool. I love the simple, like, you can tell it's probably not really edited besides maybe some polishing or whatever. It's just a photo of a a vase or a vase if you're
mason jar.
Yeah, isn't a oh, it is a mason jar.
Yeah, that's a mason
jar. Oh, that's even better. A mason jar with four flowers. I don't know what kind of flowers those are.
Possibly white roses.
Yeah. Oh. Is that a subtle York County reference?
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Probably. But yeah, and it's in like pitch black. And the light is behind the mason jar, illuminating it and a little bit of the flowers. Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Even looking at some of the track lists, you ever just look at the title of a song and be like, that's going to be a good one?
Oh, yeah.
The Fire on My Tongue. Can't wait for that one. But yeah, Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I like the understated look of it. His previous album artwork looks insane. So this one seems to be dialed.
Oh, what's that one?
Home has some crazy stuff going on. And Turmoil Tinfoil has... I really like the artwork.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what? That's crazy that that's a bluegrass album cover. Home.
Yeah. Very, very, very.
And then, wow. Yeah. What is going on with this? Turmoil and Tinfoil?
This is unbelievable.
Yeah. That's some cool shit. I really like that.
Yeah. That's cool.
I'm going to listen to that just because I hope that's what it sounds like in my ears. Sonically. Yeah. Sonically, I hope that's what it looks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I got you.
I was like, I'm not going to break my brain trying to make this metaphor.
Yeah, it just looks really understated. The song titles are pretty somber. Hellbender. But other than that, yeah. I never really listened to bluegrass, so this will be a new journey for me.
Ooh.
So yeah, really excited to have this as my jumping off point. But I'm going to give the guys Culture 2 by Migos.
I didn't know which way you were approaching this, like why you assigned it, and you laughing. As you say it, now I know which way you're going.
I was just scrolling through my like list of all my saved albums on Apple Music, and I just got to M, and it was Culture 2 by Migos. I was like, you know what, this is a good one, because I don't think we've ever talked about it on the show. So
yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear what you guys had to say about this one.
I think
I've only ever heard one song off of this album.
Stir Fry, right?
Is that on here? No,
yeah,
I've heard that one, two.
You probably heard Motorsport too.
I know I've heard three for
Walk
sure.
It, Talk It,
Narcos.
Yeah, I've heard those. I've heard Stir Fry, Narcos, and Walk It, Talk It for sure.
Oh man, this is gonna take me back to freshman year of college.
I should have given you guys Culture 3, the deluxe edition.
No.
Yeah, I've heard Motorsport too. I think I know that one.
Has any group fallen off as hard as Migos?
No. And they're still, you know, clawing at that fame that they had.
Yeah. But I think Culture 2 was a genre-defining moment.
So, yeah, I agree. Yeah, as far as the album art goes, I mean, I've seen this before. I've listened to the whole album many, many times, unfortunately. But yeah, it's the three Migos with it's a two made of doves, I think, above them in Roman numerals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's see. Offset is shushing me. Takeoff looks like he wants to fight me. And Quavo is just, he's doing the leader pose.
Because
he's the leader.
Wasn't Quavo like a really sought after athlete by college at one point?
I think so.
Yeah, probably.
I think I'm confusing him with the JID. JID had a scholarship to like a D1 school, and he like turned it down to rap. But I think Quavo was like a basketball player or something, and he was in a similar.
Quavo was Migos hitmaker. Quavo was actually a record-setting high school quarterback.
Mm.
Of course he was.
So he was really good at football.
That guy was like born to be like center stage. You know what I mean? Like he's like the figurehead of Migos.
Whatever career path.
Yeah, and he would have made it work. He's a quarterback. Yeah, like whatever, wherever he finds himself, he's going to be like the de facto person of that group.
Yeah.
Better or worse. They are a fascinating trio. I will say that.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm really upset that I just now figured out that they're not brothers.
Yeah, they're they're like uncles and nephews, right?
I talked about that. Like, isn't Takeoff like somebody's uncle?
Yeah. Takeoff is Quavo's uncle. I think he's both their uncle. And Offset is Migos, or is Quavo's cousin? Is Migos' cousin? Yeah, let me look. How are the Migos related?
I thought they were just like friends, and then I think it was Jared was like, "Oh yeah, one of them is an uncle." I was like,
"Yeah."
Imagine being like a family gathering, and like, "Hey, uncle, we start rapping." Wait,
okay, it's actually flipped. They're directly related and were raised together. Quavo is Takeoff's uncle. Okay. Offset is Quavo's cousin.
Once removed.
And I always thought Takeoff was like significantly older than the rest, but Quavo is Takeoff's uncle, which doesn't mean he's significantly older, but actually you could be younger and still be an uncle.
I think Takeoff's the youngest one.
No way. Yeah. Migos ages.
Offset is 29 and Quavo is 30. What? Which
that's crazy.
Takeoff is 27. So Takeoff's the youngest one. I also think
Offset.
I also think Takeoff has the laziest rapper name.
You think?
Yeah, I think Quavo is. I think Quavo was his actual nickname growing up because his real name is Quavius.
Yeah.
So that one makes sense. I think Takeoff and Offset are both kind of weird and lazy. I want to know how they got their names.
Wait, so you think Takeoff is lazy? Is that what you were saying?
I think Takeoff is a lazy name for a rapper. Because his name is not even going to try to say that name. I have no idea what his real name is.
Oh, yeah. What would your rapper name be then, Alex?
His name is Kershnik Kari Ball.
Yeah. And then
what would you?
I don't know. Let's go to a rap name challenger here.
He should just go by Lil Ball.
I was literally about to say
ball. Were you? Little balls.
Let's see. A rap name generator. Here we go.
Are you on the rap? Because there's a Wu-Tang generator. That's how Childish Gambino got his name.
Oh, that's good too.
Really? What?
Mine would be Shit Nutsack.
Oh my goodness.
Mine? What? I typed mine into the Wu-Tang thing and it literally just called me Woo Me.
A Chinese name. Really?
Wait, does any name? Oh, wait.
Mine that I just got from this rap generator is Sling Alley Slingshot.
1972. All
right. I'm an idiot. The Woo Me part is the button to click. It says Woo Me. Damn it. All right, my name is actually Evil Nighttime.
I just refreshed it and got a new one. Baron Money A. Trump. What?
That doesn't make sense.
No, none of these make sense. Justice A. Flavor, a.k.a. Diddy Chill. This one's funny. Oh, man. I'm going to go to the Wu-Tang one.
Yeah, I just typed Ben's in and his name is Evil Dynamic.
That's so stupid. Why are these so bad?
Why are they all evil? Alec, yours is Soldier Indolent.
Seriously?
Oh, wait, what happens when you type in Childish Gambino? Donald. What if it gave me Donald Glover? Floater Teensy.
That's so good.
This makes no sense.
I have no idea.
Oh, here we go.
Floater Teensy.
Keep talking for like 30 seconds. I'm going to fill out this generator form.
All right. Oh, God, well, okay. This must be a pretty big generator form.
Let's just do Jabcast. All right. The Jabcast will now be known as Diviner Rational.
Oh, my.
That sounds like an international company.
It does. Definitely does.
Diviner Rational stock is down 3 points this week after a host on their podcast. denounced capitalism. I don't know. His name was Ben Wayman. News at 11.
More news at 11. Give me your best Briggs voice, Jared.
I'm not going to do that. I don't want to disrespect the man on the podcast. I just typed in poop into the Wu-Tang Clan and said Dr. Rapid.
No way.
All right. I typed in, I found this website where you type in a bunch of your like favorite things. It's like your favorite TV character, like your favorite like pet's name or whatever. And it gives you a big list of all of the suggestions. And Benadonna was one of the ones on there.
Oh.
Inspecta Legendary.
Oh my.
Oh man, that sounds like 90s.
Benormous W.
Wow. What's this website?
I'll send you the link.
Okay. Well, before we get too carried away with this, let's Alec, why don't you take us into random thoughts and we'll have more fun with this later.
Yes. So
this could be an episode in itself.
Yeah, it could. So my random thought is pillow fight today.
Let's hear it.
What could that mean?
you know what a pillow fight is, right?
I don't think I've ever been in a pillow fight.
What?
Really? Yeah, at sleepovers, you know, we just had guy stuff like drinking beers and
oh yeah, well when I was in middle school, me and my buddies like to shoot each other. That's how cool we were. We didn't do pillow fights, we shot it at each other.
Oh man. Well, pillow fighting, there's actually a national pillow fighting tournament.
Oh yeah,
in Japan.
Alec, do you remember we talked about this on our Alec and Ben in the Morning at Night?
Yeah, I did. I don't believe we brought this up. I think this was a candidate and you and me were like discussing what to talk about, but I don't think this made it into the weird sports category.
You are correct.
There is a national pillow fighting tournament in Japan. The fighters start by pretending to sleep on futons, and when the whistle sounds, they spring to their feet and race to get a pillow, a mix between dodgeball and chess. Teams are throwing pillows at each other while protecting the king.
Awesome.
What do you guys, would you take part?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I figured.
I would love to do any one of those like free for all type things where everyone's just there to have a good time. Like there's that, or like the giant dodgeball games, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I also just like to beat up strangers, but unfortunately it's illegal.
Do you think that you would get far in the competition? Do you think you could win it?
So how do you get out?
Would you be representing the United States at the national pillow fighting?
Oh, absolutely. I would absolutely hit some Russians over the head with a pillow for my country.
You said that, I'm gonna
memory foam. You take that memory foam with you.
Yeah.
Just because you said that, I'm gonna support my lineage and I'll be fighting for Ukraine.
Oh
God. I didn't know you were what is that, Ukrainian?
Yes, sir.
I don't think that's how national things work.
It is.
I think you have to be a citizen of that country to represent them at world games.
You have heritage through either of your parents. You can choose to represent that nation.
Really?
Where? At the Olympics?
I'm pretty sure.
Then I'm going to Ireland, and I'm going to be an Olympian on the ice hockey team.
Have fun.
Thank you. See you later, guys.
Loser nation.
Oh man. But yeah, there was honestly over like quarantine, there was so many weird sports on TV that I saw. I think it's because they were running out of TV to put on. Genuinely. They were running out of stuff to put on.
Like, yeah, probably.
I saw dodge juggling, which is two teams playing dodgeball, but nobody gets out unless you stop the juggler in the back from juggling. That's the only way to win the round.
Oh, like there's a full team, but there's one juggler in the back?
Yes, and they have to protect
the juggler.
The guy is juggling, and the only way you can win the round is by throwing a ball and messing up the juggler.
Ben, you're like, this is like those RPG games when there's like a buff guy that's doing like magic or whatever, that's buffing the rest of the people that you're fighting, and you have to kill him before you kill the rest of the guys.
That's exactly what this is like.
Except it's a juggler.
Oh my god.
That's great. Oh, I should try that. Well, I don't know enough people that juggle. I know zero people that can juggle.
I can't juggle.
I have to. What's an alternative to that that like anyone could do? Like something that you have to personally stay focused on, you know?
The hacky sack.
Yeah, but people are hacky sack for like 10 minutes as people are playing
that's
dodgeball. Almost just called dodgeball ball sack. I don't know why.
I also saw after that, the dodgeball juggling thing, there was juggling combat juggling.
Oh,
they were basically sword fighting while juggling.
Interesting.
And the only way you could win is by forcing the other juggler to drop whatever swords. He was juggling. So I think it was bowling pins.
Bowling.
What they were doing it with
live bombs.
Oh my god! Like in You Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Yeah,
they play that like that beach game with the grenade.
Ugh.
But I think
I'll keep on the lookout for that though.
Yeah, I think that is. I think that wraps up our show.
We did forget to announce next week's season that we're watching. We're going to be checking out Only Murders in the Building on Hulu. Yeah. This is the murder mystery show helmed by Steve Martin, Selena Gomez, and Martin Short. Looking forward to it.
I think Martin Short and the other guy who I just lost his name.
Steve Martin.
Yeah.
That's okay. I forgot. Go ahead.
I think they're both hysterical.
Yeah, that's a comedy duo that's made their place in history already. So this is a must watch.
Yeah. But thank you all very much for listening. As always, we really appreciate it. Make sure you head over to Twitter. Give us a follow at @jab_cast. I think that is all we have for you guys today. Tune in next week and you will hear us talk about everything that we scheduled for us to consume. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.
See ya.